Hey, it's Mark from Alt-1037 sitting here backstage Toyota Music Factory with Ezra from the band Vampire Weekend. What's up, man?
Not much. How's it going?
Good. It's been a minute since we've seen you. I know you've been doing a lot, but as far as with Vampire Weekend, you took a little bit of a break. You guys kind of, I guess, from publicity and everything. What's been going on for the past 5 or 6 years?
Well, part of the time was busy, but I'll admit part of the time was being pretty lazy. The first 5 or 6 years of the band was just such a whirlwind, you know, making 3 albums in 5 years. You know, some people keep that pace up forever, but I kind of felt like with the 3rd album, we just barely got it across the finish line. And even touring that album, I really felt like kind of out of gas. So it seemed like a very natural time to take a break. And for the first year or two, I wasn't really interested in going to the studio. Or, you know, you come up with little ideas, you can't help it, little song ideas, but I didn't want to rush back into the studio. And so, you know, I just needed a break from music personally, and certainly from touring. So then, you know, we started working on it, and, you know, in the meantime, I did other stuff. I made this cartoon for Netflix with Jaden Smith, and, you know, I'd do little things here and there. But yeah, in terms of Vampire Weekend, it just felt like such a massive project that taking on a whole nother album didn't feel right. So then once we started working on it, you know, that takes some time to finish. Next thing you know, it's been 6 years. It's kind of wild how time flies.
Also in that time, you started something very relevant to my interests. You started a radio show.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So tell me about what is the show? I have to admit, I'm kind of a new convert to it. And I'm completely in. So tell me about what made you want to start a radio show?
Well, it's pretty simple in a way. Like, I really don't get that much done on my own. I'm just like, in some ways I'm an ambitious person, in other ways I'm very unambitious. And so basically it happened because Zane Lowe, who was originally at Radio 1 in England, he was hired to run and build Beats 1 for Apple. So before it even launched or they even announced it, he just said, and he knew me from, you know, doing interviews over the years over there, so he was like, I just always thought you'd be good at doing a radio show. And I was like, huh, okay. I'll try it. So, you know, it's only because he asked me. And then it took a minute to kind of find the vibe, and now it's, you know, somewhere between a radio show and a podcast, and I do it with my buddy Jake, and it's been kind of cool to see that's has its like kind of dedicated cult following. And even when Vampire Weekend plays shows, you see people wearing like Time Crisis merch. That's the name of the show. So yeah, it's kind of just like something that we fell into. And the cool thing about it is that we do it every 2 weeks. So, you know, like I'm, you know, when you're like working at a radio station, like week in, week out, that consumes you. But like something about, and even once a week, I bet probably like you're in that zone. Okay, the show's coming up. There's something about anything you do every 2 weeks. It's like you get 1 week to forget that it exists and then another week to be like, oh shit, we're doing it this week. So there's something about every 2 weeks that's like this real, real sweet spot of feeling like a hobby. You know, comparing to tour, where we're like just like on tour for months. Something about every 2 weeks. It's like this really nice kind of surprise.
You describe radio perfectly. It's a hobby.
Yeah.
It's not a job.
This is,
would not describe this as job.
Well, yeah, I don't know if there's like some annoying bureaucratic stuff, but thankfully that's one thing we don't have to do. But I do think there's something about just like hanging out with your friends and talking about music. There is an element of, most people who get into it, it's like, that's what you're doing when you're off the clock too. You know, that's what you do with your friends. It's all we talk about.
One element of the show that interests me, and it's an element, I love Twitter and I've been on Twitter for a long time, is Seinfeld 2000.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So for a while, I was convinced it was you running the account, but it's actually not.
Oh, no. But Seinfeld 2000, he's become a good friend, and he's this dude that I met just because he ran this kind of like very chaotic, weird Seinfeld meme account, I guess you would say, and he's become like a part of the show, and he runs our social media for Time Crisis 2000, and it's amazing that he's going on almost like a decade of somehow still squeezing relevant jokes out of a show from the 90s.
He's literally one of the only reasons that I am still on Twitter, is just to get that Seinfeld fix.
Yeah, he's great.
Since we're on that subject, I'm sure you've put some thought into this, much like I have. What character do you relate with the most?
From Seinfeld? It's a good question. I mean, I think all four characters represent some of the dark sides that we all have. I mean, you know, like, I think a lot of people, we'd probably want to say Jerry because on the show, you know, he's even Steven. Everything kind of works out for him. He's got this kind of above it all vibe. But I think that's like a fantasy. Realistically, most of us, myself included, I'm sad to say, probably have a lot of George in us. Just like every day, just like a new problem and like, okay, wow, here we go again. I just think that's like the kind of harsh reality that we face every day. So, you know, I think every day it's like you try to be more like Jerry, but realistically you start in that kind of George mentality.
I think that's pretty much exactly spot on. I also, I think I have Banya tendencies too. Oh. I can get a little too into something.
Right.
But I try to balance that out with Jerry being cool.
Right.
And then of course George is really the sad luck that we all have.
Yeah. And I mean, Kramer, it'd just be bizarre to say Kramer. And then, you know, Elaine and Jerry, they're kind of two sides of the same coin. I think they represent similar kind of tendencies. But yeah, George is the real humanity.
Yeah. Is there a movie or a song that makes you cry every time you hear it or see it?
I don't think there's anything that make me cry every time. It's because just, you know, it's so dependent on the situation. I mean, it's a little like basic, but you know, when I think of songs that I can always go to that I always find moving, I think of like I Will Always Love You, Dolly Parton, just like a very sad, emotional song. I always used to find Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush to be like this song that had like so much drama. You know, stuff like that. A movie? Yeah, what's a sad movie? I mean, yeah, who knows with movies? The most random thing can get you when you're least expecting it. I remember once being surprised by how moved I was. Of course, everybody says this, how like on airplanes you find stuff a little more emotional and moving. And I remember there's that movie where Mark Wahlberg tries out to be on the Philadelphia Eagles. It's like he's just kind of like Joe Schmo, Philly dude.
Yes,
and so, and he's like a walk on.
Yeah.
Is it called Invincible or something like that? It's like
something like that.
An adjective.
Yeah.
And I just remember like watching that, just be like, man, I literally probably only saw that once, but yeah, the Mark Wahlberg NFL movie, that's my go-to.
It just catches you at a random time.
That's
and
right.
It could be the weirdest thing. The Notebook gets me every time. Still, can't
you know,
watch
I've
it.
Never seen that movie.
Yeah,
I feel like
cry,
I have.
If you want a good cry, good sports cry.
I've seen so many memes and stuff, but yeah.
You referenced Dolly Parton just now.
Mm-hmm.
The new record, Father of the Bride, features a good amount of duets with the great Danielle Higham.
Yeah.
Tell me how that went about, how that came about. This was the first time you really had shared like vocal duties on more than, you know, just a little bit of a song. So tell me about, was there some inspiration from some of those older country duets that were so big?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, before I knew it was going to be Danielle, which in retrospect makes perfect sense, it really just existed at this idea of a series of duets. And, I always kind of admired, kind of old school country songwriting, and especially the duets. I don't know why. That was just stuff that my dad would play for me. And the one that I reference a lot because it made a big impact on me is called You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly. And you know, and lots of stuff, you know, all like the George Jones, Tammy Wynette, and Conway Twitty, Loretta Lynn. But yeah, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly, I just always like, because it kind of it epitomizes like a certain type of a sense of humor in songwriting, and that you really find in good country songwriting. And yeah, from there I dug a lot deeper in my life. But I like that old concept, which you find there's hip hop examples and there's a lot of country examples where there's two people who don't go on the road necessarily as a as a duo. They're not a duo. You know, they put out their solo albums, but they always come back together, maybe because they're married or because they're just duet partners. They come back just because their voices sound good together, and they put out singles over decades. And there's something always interesting about that to me, like two voices coming together multiple times. So I like this idea that you find a duet partner and you don't just like stick them on one song just to cross that, you know, box off. You do a few songs with them. So I had this idea of like finding the right person to do a few songs with. And, you know, at first I had all sorts of different ideas. And then eventually, because, you know, she was around and we know her well, Danielle came down just to help us out by putting some vocals down. And then it kind of like had this like real like duh moment where you're like, oh, you know, she's one of the few other kind of front people and bands that like I really know well and I've known since the early days of Haim. And I was like, oh, and our voices sound good together, and she's got such a great voice and such a great musician. And it's kind of like, oh yeah, of course, makes a lot of sense.
It like makes it a little bit more than just a feature, because the feature is very big right now, especially in hip hop and in pop music. It's almost like she is a part or a character on the new record.
And that's how I felt too. You know, I had mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I've seen there are a lot of records that get put out every day where you get that real kind of A&R sense, meaning somebody at the label was like, oh, you two should get together. And you don't always even have to get together. It could just be emailing the vocals or whatever, which I also want to say sometimes works great. But for me, there's something about having a sense of community that was important to me. So this, even though I kind of felt like after the first three albums, like, yeah, that's, we need a break from my voice. It can't just be me singing over and over and over again. But the idea of finding somebody like Danielle or Steve Lacy, is also on the album, and having them be in the studio and be part of the process and appear on multiple songs, that was really important to me. And yeah, I always liked that idea that when somebody shows up, they're not just there to be on one song. They become a part of it. And, you know, like I think about the, you know, in the early 90s, the big Dr. Dre album that kind of introduced the world to Snoop Dogg, The Chronic. And, you know, it's like people didn't know who Snoop Dogg was, and suddenly he's like on this whole album. And it's, you know, Dr. Dre is a rapper himself, but he's also more of a producer and guy who's kind of like presenting a whole thing. And you like were really introduced to this other dude. And then, of course, he went on to do his solo albums. But there's something cool about that where, yeah, it's not just different person on every track.
Do you see that as kind of something in your future, is putting on other artists and kind of building a sort of collective outside of just Vampire Weekend, where you kind of use the platform you've been able to establish and get some other artists off?
Well, I like the idea. I like the idea of it. I mean, I think the truth is, and I think where a lot of bands sometimes get in trouble or feel stagnant, is because very, very few people make music in the same way with the same people year in, year out. Almost nobody. Even going back to the 60s, when you talk about the archetypes of what a band is, a rock and roll band, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, even those guys, they would be bringing, you know, a Billy Preston to play keys, or, you know, somebody to play saxophone, and just kind of mixing it up. Because even those people, some of the greatest songwriters and musicians of all time, saw the need and maybe even just the excitement of kind of mixing it up and bringing different people into it. So I think sometimes there's this idea of like, yeah, a band is this core of people, and sometimes there's a producer can swap in and swap out. But Vampire Weekend has never been like that. From the earliest days, you know, we would try all sorts of stuff in the studio. We would bring in different people to play. We would kind of mix things up. We would make music in ways that might maybe have more in common with pop or hip hop than rock. And we've always just tried to be open-minded. So that's kind of built into our DNA. So the idea of opening the doors more, it just seems natural. And then, you know, the only thing is that it has to feel right. You know, I was lucky that I already knew Danielle, and then meeting Steve Lacy happened very naturally. He just hit me up, and everything kind of had that family community feel. So I'd like to keep that going. But yeah, you can't force it.
I've always loved Steve. Actually, I got into the internet right as he released that EP, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So now I'm such a huge fan of him too.
And yeah, he's sick.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
What do you miss about the East Coast? You're in LA now, right? Pretty much.
Yeah,
time.
I live most of the time in LA.
Yeah. What do you miss most?
I've got nothing bad to say about LA, and the, you know, LA versus New York, I think, is such a a boring conversation for the 99% of people who don't live in either place. I've just happened to spend a lot of my life in those two places. But yeah, when you talk more broadly about like the East Coast, I mean, in some ways, it's just those things that anybody can associate with their childhood, those things that make a strong impression on you, like the colors, something that I never really thought about before in LA. It's just the light is different. And when I think about not just New York City, but other places that I've lived in my life, New Jersey is where I spent most of my childhood, New Jersey and upstate New York and Vermont and Maine and just all these East Coast places, Pennsylvania, these places that I know fairly well. I just think about the way the trees look, the type of trees and the light and that stuff. So those are the things that it's just hard to put your finger on, you know, because realistically, the things that you first go to about, like, well, what place has better pizza, whatever, you know, like everywhere has good pizza now. I'm sure the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the top 10 pizza places would like shut anybody up. You know, it's not like 1950. You know,
there's like get something sent to you. They could just put it on dry ice and you could get it in 2 days.
Oh yeah, if you want to be, like, if you want to be real bougie,
small.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, every place has good coffee, good pizza, you know, every city, every metro area. So, you know, to get hung up on that stuff, like, I find a little pointless. So yeah, it's these very hard to put your finger on things, just like a certain type of, you know, when I think of growing up, I think of like a kind of stormy summer day when like the sky gets dark or something, and just like a very specific feeling. I bet there's probably stuff like that in Texas, but like Southern California, you don't quite ever get that darkened like 3 p.m. sky in August, and then like it rains for 45 minutes, then it goes away. And these are the things that, you know, you don't realize until you're an adult, like, oh, that's like really like emotional or something, light and weather and wind and stuff. So those are like the very hyper-specific things that I miss about the East Coast, you know?
I'm becoming way more into weather these days. I think mm-hmm. that comes with age. And like those sort of descriptions outside of the surface level, where can I get a good slice of pizza or a good bagel or whatever,
yeah.
It's not as important until you actually leave and you're like, oh man, I really miss like in springtime in Texas when you can actually be outside on a patio or something.
Right.
You know, missing that feeling or, you mm-hmm. know, those fall sunsets or whatever.
Yeah,
it comes with age, it comes with perspective, and we can tell there's a lot of that new perspective on the new record, which is why I feel like we're growing up at the same time. We're about the same age. So
yeah,
it's
also
kind of a very personal experience too.
And that's an important thing too, is it in music, I find it, you know, it's like always a tightrope walk, because you want to make music that feels fresh, and there's like you associate like, you know, being freshness with being young. And, you know, there was like a certain excitement. We were, you know, in our early 20s coming out with our first album. And yet at the same time, it's like you want to, it's such a funny puzzle to figure out. How can you like age gracefully, grow up with your audience, but not go like, you know, full jump the shark, like old man, just like, you know, just boring. And yeah, so it's interesting to think about what are the things about the moment that you find yourself at in life, even when you exit your early 20s, and where there's still something interesting to say and there's still something interesting to explore.
Ezra, it was really great to meet you.
Yeah,
the
nice
new album,
talking
Father
to you.
The Bride is out now. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.